Hi, this is Jay Nimrow. You're listening to The Life Autistic. This is episode 586. And the topic today is modern flagellation. And it just came to me this morning. And let me just say a few words about flagellation in the first place, and then we'll start talking about the modern version. Now, in the past, usually the deep, dark past, there were people that were called flagellants. They would go into a closet. This was something religious that was done. I guess they felt that it cleansed their soul. For those who think that, you know, first, okay, well, those who see themselves as sinners, of course, and they saw that self-flagellation is going ahead and punishing themselves for their sins, I don't know what that was supposed to ultimately accomplish. Instead of stopping their sins, they would just flagellate themselves. Or that they felt like if they were beating themselves, they were somehow beating out their natural tendencies and turning more toward God. I don't know all the nuances of it, but that's basically what it is. They would go off into a closet with some kind of a strap or cat of nine tails or whatever, and they would beat themselves. Now, so, you know, you could take that sick way, you could take that, you know. To modernize, this looks pretty sick, you know. Looks a little extreme. Looks like, you know, we would say, well, why would you want to do that to yourself? And in thinking, I've been thinking about some things this morning and talking about them with Lisa. As usual, mostly talking to Lisa. Sometimes she's a wonderful audience. Even though sometimes she goes, I wish I could get a word in edgewise. She often says that. Not sometimes. Now, talking to Lisa about several things, some of them having related to do with the mechanics of our local church congregation, our local branch of the church, the LDS Church, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. But then thinking that this is a general, can be a general problem. It's really easy for me when I look out at people and I see what they, these are always my own perceptions, so take them as such. I don't know what people are thinking, because they often don't say. And even if they do tell you, they're probably not telling you the whole story, because either they don't trust you or you know, whatever. That's where I came up with the whole idea of modern flagellation. Even though we look at that and we go, oh, how gross, how heinous, why would people do that to themselves? You know what? We do it to ourselves every day, in a figurative sense. We don't actually get out a strap and beat ourselves with it, but we practically treat ourselves as heinously, as if this is some sort of a virtue. I think that's why the flagellants did it, was because they thought this would get them closer to God or make them better people. I'm not sure. But I think we do our modern form of flagellation for the same reason. Because we think it's good, mostly because society doesn't mind that we do that. In some corners, other people profit off of our flagellation. So, anyway, shall I give you an example? Let me take one that's not religiously based, strictly. For me, it's a little bit, because within the Mormon Church, you have a your young men, the guys between the ages of 12 and 18, are typically, by church policy, supposed to be scouts, Boy Scouts. You know, and there's several different flavors of Boy Scouts at the Mormon Church. Integrates into their youth program, and that ends up being the youth program for men, or that's what the church would like to see as the youth program for men. Where I live, here in beautiful Tucumcari, well, I don't know if it's beautiful, but it's Tucumcari, Scouts has never really worked. The few times we've tried to pull off Scouts, it's only been for short periods of time. It's usually been something of a farce. Scouting is an interesting animal, an interesting beast, because it's somewhat of a relic. And I know that scouters will argue vehemently with me about how purposeful and wonderful scouting is for today's young man, but honestly, it's a relic of the past. You know, scouting's heyday is in its past. You know, there are not as many boys involved in Cub Scouts and Boy Scouts now as there were when I was a kid, or when my father was a kid. And so, yeah, scouting's heyday is past, and for the most part, that's because a lot of people don't see scouting as fulfilling a need. Now, in the LDS Church, it's somewhat problematic. The church has a few attitudes that, if taken to extreme, are really damaging. And all too often, we tend to take things to extremes. That's part of at least modern nature. I don't know if it's the nature of man in general, but certainly modern man seems to like taking things to extremes, or we tend to get there whether we ever intended to or not. When the LDS Church, a long time ago, decided to associate with Boy Scouts and said, you know, Boy Scouts is the program for our young men, and we're still doing that. It's still the way it is. In fact, you're going to take some garbage if you don't have a scout troop in your local branch or ward unit. You know, you're going to take some flack for that. Hopefully, not too much if you can't really pull it off. Because scouting is supposed to be a voluntary thing. All the leadership is voluntary. There's a very few paid people involved with scouting. The kids come because they want to. Now, back in the 50s, it wasn't that big of a deal. Everybody kind of marched to the rat-a-tat-tat of a military drum, and it was no problem getting volunteers for stuff because people felt duty-bound. You know, and it was somewhat prestigious too. Oh, he's a local scoutmaster. Scouting was always envisioned as something that a community would do. You know, it could be a faith community, it could be just a geographical community, like we usually think of, a town or a city. Especially one as small as my town would probably only have one town scout troop, you know. And sometimes they were associated with the school, you know. The local scout council would have a deal with the local school, and they would come in and they would recruit kiddies, and they would come together. They might even use school facilities to do their meetings. And that all used to be very, very good in the days of we all marched to the beat of a military drum. And we don't now, for the most part. as a people. Uh-oh. My car isn't behaving very well. Yikes. Come on. It's not liking this whole thing here. I'm going up a hill and it's really going... Anyway, okay. So, like I said, the problem, our example, is scouting. Scouting is somewhat a relic of the past. When people think about scouting, they think of the 50s, the 40s and the 50s and stuff like that, or the 20s or the 30s. You know, they think of that kind of thing. You know, it tends to be a group that has its roots in a weird kind of nationalism, in a weird kind of, even though they definitely say, oh no, that's not the way this works, in kind of a paramilitary sort of attitude. When I was a scout, the biggest, most well-funded, and most active troop, if you really wanted to be with the best scout troop, you would go with the one that was run by the military base next to the town I lived in. Our troop was much smaller, the one that was associated with the LDS Church. But we held our own against the bigger one. You know, and there was somewhat of a rivalry there, and I never really got into it because I'm not that kind of a person. I don't hate other people because they're part of a competitive organization. I'm not like that. I don't know how many people are anymore, but you know, I don't know. Like I say, I'm Zenith/autistic/ADHD/whatever. And I don't know what other people think. I don't know what motivates other people. I can barely get a handle on what motivates me. So anyway, you've got this scouting. And in the Mormon Church, you know, it's not very voluntary. You know, there is this whole concept of having a calling. And that calling isn't something that, you know, they put up the list of jobs to be done on a bulletin board, and somebody who's interested in doing that job takes the thing off the bulletin board and goes and does a job interview with, like, the bishop. That's not how it works. The bishop's kind of the local leader of the church. You know, it's done more by selection from the leaders with hopefully some divine inspiration there. You know, I don't want to naysay the process at all. You know, when done properly, I think the process works pretty good. Because people often people who go after challenging jobs often go after them for the wrong reasons, for prestige or power. And the church isn't about that, so you shouldn't go that way. Other jobs don't get filled because they are seen as being too much work or not easy enough, and therefore there would be a whole bunch of probably pretty important jobs that never would get filled. And you don't want to do that either. So calling kind of takes care of that. But when you kind of mush together the Mormon Church and its attitude of a calling. And this isn't something you keep for the rest of your life. You only have callings for a time, and then you get released from that and called to something else. And you can tell by the terminology that's used kind of how it's perceived. It isn't something you choose, you know. I can't say that. Some people really might want to be like the bishop or the branch president or the stake president. You know, and I can't say that I've not been one that said, boy, I would really love to have that kind of being listened to. For being a person that typically has crazy ideas and gets poo-pooed an awful lot and gets called kind of crazy, you know, it would be cool to be in a leadership position just so that I could try out some of the things that I've been talking and thinking about and be able to, you know, be able to put them into action. Because when I discuss them in the committees that we have, in the councils that we have, mine's usually shoved aside. It's just, no, we're not going to do that. That's not right. Anyway, so when you come up with this whole concept of the church calling, but you mix that in and you mesh it with scouting, which is supposed to be voluntary, nobody should feel compelled to be a scout leader. Nobody should feel compelled to be a scout. But that's exactly what the Mormon church does. People are compelled to do both. Now, hopefully, and in most decent-sized wards and branches, you would, that's not a problem. You usually have one or two, or maybe more, what we define as scouters. People who love scouts, or who like scouts, who like doing the things that scouts does, get all excited about scouting. And by nature, you tend to give those kinds of callings to those people, and everything works fine. What it breaks down is when you don't have volunteers. Now, you have to understand, in the Mormon Church, every kid between 12 and 18 is supposed to have something to do with scouts, and to a large degree, this falls apart. A lot of wards and branches are able to do it for 12 and 13-year-olds. Those are the deacons in the Aaronic priesthood. It usually works, you know. If you have a scout troop, it's mostly for the 12 and 13-year-olds, and its whole goal in life is to get you to be a Eagle Scout. And the Mormon Church is great at cranking out Eagle Scouts because it's something of an obligation. You know, it's like everything else. You know, and for many things, it's not bad to have them be obligations because they're basically good, they're basically needed, and it's basically a development thing. You don't just do everything because you just want to do them. You need to do some things because they need to be done. You know, unfortunately, Eagle Scouts become one of those. You know, the Mormon Church, there's a whole range of things that need to be done. You progress in the Aaronic priesthood as a young man in preparation for getting the Melchizedek priesthood, which is the higher priesthood, which is the adult. We're the adult males have the Melchizedek priesthood. And all this stuff before is to prepare them to get to that point. As part of that, you have this powerful thing that's called serving a mission. You know, we send out those guys, you've probably seen them on the streets, white shirts and ties, maybe with a suit coat on, and sometimes they're on bicycles, often they're on bicycles, and they go out and they teach people about the Mormon Church. You know, it's anticipated that every young man will ultimately do this. I did, and everybody, you know, everybody else did. And those are all good things, so you kind of know who you are. It helps identify yourself. It helps put forth the work of a church, and it's something that God asks us to do. So it's a good thing to do. And the funny thing is, when we kind of meshed scouts with all this, all the things about scouting that was supposed to be good and voluntary and the kids wanted to be a part of and be, all of a sudden became obligations. Everything around it. The need that you need to have a troop committee along with your scout troop, you know. It wasn't full of a bunch of people that actually wanted scouting to work well. It became an obligation. You would stick a bunch of people in there that didn't have anything better to do. You know, that was something that you could do. You know, you'll be in charge of this on the scout committee, and they go, I don't know anything about scouts. Well, you were. Which is much different from another scout troop where it's mostly the parents of the kids and they love the scouting program. They've got sons and they want to put their sons through the program and they want to make the troop the best it can be so their kids can have the best experience. When you stick obligation in there, and I'm sorry, it's sad to say, but the Mormon Church does that, it makes you... You know, it's somewhat, it's forced, let's be honest. I've been put in a situation a couple of times where I was called to be the scout master, and I'm sorry. I have not, and it's not really something logical I can talk about. I really don't have a taste for scouting. I don't enjoy it, you know? It may come from the fact that I don't know. I have different ideas about teenagehood than most people in society. I think teenagehood is not a glorious, wonderful time that needs to be extended into, you know, the 30s and the 40s, like our society seems to want to do. I'm a person that says teenagehood is a short transitional period toward being a man, at least for boys, you know. You go from a boy, you go through a short period where you're gawky and weird and you're trying to understand how to be a man. Now, our society has decided that there's lots of money to be made with keeping boys in that gawky stage. You know, don't grow up, don't get any older, because when you become responsible, you don't spend as much money. You don't have a lot of disposable money, and our society really demands that you spend tons and tons of money, and the more frivolous you spend it, the better off everybody is. That's my take on it. And I don't know if that has to do with my attitude towards scouting. I've never been a great proponent of scouting. I'm not excited by scouting. Probably because of the fact that my scouting experience was wrapped up in my church experience, and it was somewhat forced. I had to do it. And one day I just said no more. And boy, let me tell you, after that, you know, the church didn't have much to offer me for the rest of my time until I went on my mission, for the sole reason that if you weren't in scouts, there was nothing for you. Of course, I was mostly the only guy my age, so that was another complication. So, anyway. So let's take a step back from all of this. You have a weird situation, and I will get back to modern flagellation. If you think I've wandered off the path, I really haven't. Although I am trying to explain this whole scouting thing, because it is an example that came up. Right now in my branch, for instance, we have a scout troop technically. You know, we're chartered, everything's done through the way. I'm all about, if you don't have the scouter, don't bother doing scouts. Don't bother doing it, don't bother getting involved in it, don't do it. If you don't have the goodies, don't do it. It's that simple. And if you don't have somebody who's enthusiastic and is just practically chomping at the bit to get it done, don't try. Because you'll end up making a mess of it. End up making a horrible mess of it. I've said it millions of times, and I'm typically ignored because I'm sorry. You know, Jay's a radical. Jay's trouble. So you don't listen to Jay. Even when Jay's right, don't listen to Jay. You know, because it's really easy to just ignore Jay. You know, all of his ideas are crazy. I think most of my ideas are closer to right than what society gives, but that's okay. Anyway, so our circumstance is, you know, we're trying to find a new scoutmaster. I think we burned out the poor guy that was trying to do it. And he was doing it out of a sense of obligation, not because he really wanted to. He just signed it because nobody else would. I was being steadfast and saying, no, I'm not going to do scouts. Of course, they all said, we don't understand why you're behaving like this, Jay. And I would say, well, you have to understand, it's a voluntary organization, and I'm not interested in volunteering for it. Well, it's a calling. You're obligated to do it. You go, when you shove somebody in there who feels obligated, you kill it. You kill the program. It doesn't have any life, it doesn't have any spirit, it has no interest, and nobody wants to do it. And so, anyway, they're trying to get a new Scoutmaster, and they're looking out at a better who could do it. It's not a question of who would, because everybody knows that nobody wants to do it. Nobody's interested. And I'll be the first one to say, why are we going through this whole thing? Why are we doing this? Why are we doing this? Because what ultimately happens is, let's take, for instance, that poor guy who has been filling the role of Scoutmaster. You know, and I'm not saying he's not well-trained. I'm not saying, because he did. He's been an assistant Scoutmaster other places. And but, you know, he's busy. He's got other things to do, things that are more important. And scouting just is another headache on his plate that he really doesn't want. He didn't want it. He was just doing it because he saw that there was nobody else doing it, and he said, well, fine, I'll do it. And typically with kind of the attitude of, you know, getting really frustrated with other people for not wanting to do it. And, you know, it's the whole wrong way of going at things. And so he has been, because he's doing something that should be joyful and fun, and that he can transmit that joy and fun to the boys so that they'll have fun and joy and that they can learn things at the same time. That's always a big part of Scouts. This isn't just going out and having a good time. Although it's an important aspect, the Mormon Church does a crappy job of making it fun because we're doing it out of obligation because we're supposed to. And, you know, it's like, I don't know if it's an example of throwing out the baby with the bathwater, but it's trying to do something that's supposed to accomplish these goals, and when you don't do it in the right way, it doesn't accomplish the goals, you're just going through the motions. And that's what I feel like in this particular example we do with Scouts, for instance, in the LDS Church, in our small, tiny branch of Tucumcari. We're just trying to push through a program that nobody really wants, that because of that, it doesn't fulfill anybody's needs, and it just creates headaches and heartaches for anybody anywhere near it. It really, really, really does. So let's take a step back from that and talk about self-flagellation, because this happens all the time when people feel obligated. Now, this is becoming, I think, less and less prevalent in our world because we're really training responsibility out of people, out of most people. Most people don't feel a sense of responsibility, and we're trained to not feel that way. We're not, you know, we're supposed to feel loyal, but not responsible. You know, it really helps in wartime when you're killing people. If people don't feel responsible, if they say, well, I was ordered to shoot somebody, and I don't have a problem with that because I've been trained all my life to not feel responsible for when things happen. I'm not responsible for that. Somebody else is. My captain is responsible for giving me the order to shoot. I was just the guy that pulled the trigger. I'm not responsible. So I'm talking about people who, for some reason, have gotten through our whole system of draining responsibility out of you, but they still feel a sense of responsibility. When you dump something on somebody that they're not prepared for, or they don't really have the capability or the interest in actually doing, you set up people for a problem if they have a responsibility streak in them. You set up an incredible feeling of guilt. Now, I felt this so many times. My wife and I have that in common. Lisa is a very responsible person, too. If you give her a responsibility, she's going to try diligently to get that done. And I'm like that. I don't know if I'm taking it to the level she does. You know, I've gotten to the point to where I just have to sit back and say, you know what, I'm not going to get involved in this. because I've been burned so many times, you know. To really make it work, you need to have support, you need to have extra help. It doesn't need to just be you. So many times it ends up just being me, and it's like, what? You know, and then it's like, I can't do this. And it's like, well, I'm sorry, it's your calling. Do it. Do it anyway. Do the best you can. You know, and people being well-meaning will say, well, just do what you can. And under most circumstances, with a person who doesn't feel any responsibility, that's not a problem for them. Because, you know, they can just blow it off and say, you know what, I've got great experience of blowing things off. I can just say it's not important, and, you know, you can tell me I'm doing the job, but I'm not. You know, I'll take the title. If there's any accolades to be done, you know, and we're pretty free in our psychological society, we usually give people credit where it's not due. We usually give people praise where it's not deserved. We usually do all those things. You know, schools are horrible at telling little Johnny how wonderful he is for breathing. You know, oh, you're doing such a wonderful job, Johnny. Thank you. Thank you for sitting, you know, and talking about it as if they were, you know, they had just run some big race and won. You're sitting in your chair quietly. You aren't causing me trouble. Let's give you a gold medal because of a wonderful job you've done. You go, all they're doing is exchanging oxygen, you know, bringing in oxygen, throwing out carbon dioxide, sweating. They're going to have to pee or defecate at some point. We need to shove some food down their holes so they don't croak on us. When that's all they're basically doing, taking up space, doing what needs to be done. So anyway, you know, we get into that. And people who do that, you know, they don't care. They don't care about anything. They've been trained not to really care. Our society is excellent at doing that. It also gives society a lot of benefits that society wants, not what individuals need at all, what society wants. It's easier because people become really immature. No, they never gain maturity. They don't become immature. You start out immature. You never rise from that. And like I said, it works great for society. Those people are much more easier to separate their money from. You know, it keeps the economy going. I was just listening to the radio where everybody says, oh, we have to drop the interest rate and do that like that because people need to get back to spending their money. They're starting to get nervous and they're starting to hold on to their money. They're concerned about the future, therefore they're not just putting out the money with abandon. And that's what our economy needs. Our economy depends upon this stuff going on. And I'll have to do a podcast about that ultimately here. Just so you can get the take of what Jay, the Zenith Autistic Asperger's ADHD whatever guy has on that topic. When you combine responsibility, a responsible person, with an undoable job or a job for which they did not ask, for which, you know, they're not suited, for which they have no skills, what you get out of that is modern flagellation, self-flagellation. I need to make sure I say that, modern self-flagellation. They're killing themselves, trying to do something that really shouldn't be done, something that may have had a good idea, but be designed for a totally different circumstance. That happens in our little church branch here in Tucumcari. We can't carry out most of the programs that the church has because they're made for large wards, big suckers, you know, where you're going to have five people that could be Scoutmaster, you call all those five guys to be in the scout troop, and they kind of trade around, and they kind of divvy up the responsibilities, you know. They get to participate in all the fun stuff, and they get to split up all of the headaches of, you know, just the paperwork, the organization, having to deal with all the things that scouts have, you know, a scouting organization has to deal with. All these things, and, you know, and there it is. And it works there. It works pretty well. You can do it because you end up just having volunteers, you know, when they bring you, when you first come to a place, they, usually the branch president of the bishop snags you, brings you into his office and says, well, tell me about yourselves. And from that, they start getting ideas of what they would like to put you in to help out the branch, you know, to jobs that need to be done in the branch. You know, and if you don't have a scout, you have to make one, a scout master, a scouter. You know, you have to manufacture one if you don't have one. Sometimes you'll have somebody who says, "Well, that sounds really interesting to me. I'll give it a shot," and they can become one. You know, nobody's taking away the possibility for development here. That's an important aspect of this, but it has to be something somebody wants. You don't want to give them a calling in something that really requires something of a commitment to it. Scouting certainly does. It requires a certain amount of enthusiasm and commitment to the ideals of the thing. And if you don't have it, you're going to flail and die. I always think it's funny because the guys who are always saying, "We need to have a scout troop," they're the ones that don't want to do it. It's like, I'm totally confused. If you want it, you do it. Oh, well, no, it just needs to happen. That's the kind of sick stuff that happens when a voluntary organization starts becoming obligatory or mandatory. Is you get a bunch of people that just want it to happen because they know it's supposed to be happening. And if it's not fair, they want to make it happen. They don't want to do it themselves. They don't want anything to do with it. They want somebody else to do it. And their attitude becomes, let's pressure somebody. Let's apply pressure. That sometimes substitutes for leadership, is pressure. You know, if I press these people, I'll get what I need out of them. You know, is that kind of Dilbert? You know, the pointy-haired boss in Dilbert, the comic strip? His management style basically ends up being, well, he's somewhat schizophrenic because you can't really place him. But often when he's trying to manage people, he does it through pressure. He pressures you into doing something, you know. And that's probably the worst kind of leadership in the world is to pressure people. Don't want to do it that way. Certainly doesn't inspire anybody, and you have to understand, the Mormon Church in its deepest heart, nobody's obligated to be there. Well, I can't say that. Because of my responsible streak, I feel I have to be there, whether it's pleasant or not. See, that doesn't help either, because then that gives people the impression that everything's good and everything's great, because people keep showing up, and you go, Are people only here because they feel like they have to be here? You know, are you just coming because God tells you to, because God tells you that you should, that you have to? That it's a part of going to heaven? You know? And if you don't do it, you're not going to go to heaven? There's a little bit of pressure there. Of course, people say, well, God uses pressure to get people to do things. And you go, not really. He uses it as the original way to get you into something, but he knows it's not long lasting. But you're going to have to get some kind of a testimony of this stuff to keep you going. You can go for a little while based on, you know, God wants me to come here, and if I don't come, he's going to smite me, or something along those lines. But that might get you there for a little while, but it's not going to hold you there. And that's just reality, honestly. It gets right down to it that way. Anyway, so when you mix responsibility with horrendous things that quote-unquote need, quote, need, unquote, things to be done, and most of the stuff doesn't really need to be done, you get self-flagellation. You get people whipping themselves. And that's never good. People were right. We don't tend to do that much anymore. It's certainly not some kind of doctrine somewhere, I hope. Because it's not the way to get things done. I've had many people who just dropped out of the Mormon church that I've talked to, that I've met, who did so. Not all of them, but some of them did so because they said the church is really demanding and their demands went too far. And I don't have to have that. Or they don't feel the need to do that. And I always come back to it, why does the church feel the need to be torturous to people? Because it tends to be for me. I know some people just go to church on Sunday. They turn down most of the callings that come their way. They smile. They're happy. Much happier than I am, for instance, because you know what? I feel guilty when I don't do a good job of the calling. And I actually try. Most of these guys never even try. But yet, they seem to carry on happily and they're doing well. And I think it's because of their sense of responsibility. They don't feel terribly responsible. It's not their job. You know. Whereas if it becomes my job, I feel probably, you know, people would say, well, you're just being over-responsible. And you go, well, I usually say, hey, I'm sorry, somebody's got to feel responsible. Or the things that need doing won't get done. And now I guess I'm going through a crisis myself because I'm trying to determine what really needs to be done and it's only about half of what I see. And I've got other troubles too, you know. There are a good deal of people that come to the LDS Church for the atmosphere of being part of a larger family. And I'm kind of that crazy uncle sort of a person, you know. I'm hard to deal with sometimes. Any group of people are going to have people like that. I don't really want to be that kind of a person, but I'm almost compelled to be because I see problems that never get worked out, that never get solved or even addressed, but yet people feel all flagellant about it. They self-flagellate. Oh, I'm not getting that done. You go, well, then don't get weird about it. Can you physically get it done? No. So then what's the deal for it? You can't sit there and get weird about it. Do what you can do. But don't overburden yourself with the cares of everything else, particularly. Because that I've noticed that in myself. I don't know how many people do that too. I think by and large our society is getting away from circumstances that create our modern version of self-flagellation. But as a consequence of that, I think the pendulum swung too far toward just being an irresponsible person. Everybody says that's not my job. Therefore, there is probably some pretty important things that need to be done that people just aren't doing, that just aren't happening. You know, it has something to do with priority, it has something to do with having the right perspective on things. And I'm not saying I have the perfect perspective, the perfect outlook, and that I can tell you what's most important and what's not. I have been told over time, in no uncertain terms, that I don't have a good grasp on reality. that I don't, that whatever is supposed to compel people to do things that I'm not utilizing, I'm utilizing something else. In the Mormon church, it's called being influenced by the wrong spirit. And I've been accused of it enough times that I just say, you know what, okay, don't call me to leadership positions, please. Don't put me in a position where I have to seek the will of the Lord, because every time I do, and every time I think I get it, I'm constantly told I don't have it, you know, that I'm wrong. And you're going, you know, and I say, well, I prayed about it, and I got this impression. They go, well, you're being influenced by the wrong spirit. And it's like, boy, is that convenient. I think it was mostly they didn't think that was the right thing to do, and so that's a convenient way to win that argument. You say, well, you're being influenced by the wrong spirit. And it's like, now how can you possibly know that? You know, now, of course, the church has an answer for that, too. You know, and I'm not saying I'm walking away from the Mormon church. I'm not. The restored gospel that was brought by Joseph Smith was a fantastic, marvelous, true thing. Do I think the church is perfect? No. Do I think the church is probably a better structure than any other to be brought together to try to help people learn the gospel and integrate it into their lives? I can't think of any that would work. That would work most consistently given the people that we have. I think a church structure and the way the church is structured is probably as good as we can pull off of the fact that most people aren't really going to end up doing what needs to be done. You know, so you could say, well, you know, a lot of people don't want to do the work, but we're going to call it to them anyway. On the off chance that they'll do something, they'll be blessed for it. Maybe they'll learn something. And that seems to be the primary motivation for these things. Sad, but true. You know, would it be better if it was more family-oriented? Yeah. Even more than we say it is? Yeah. Where fathers and mothers did all the teaching, basically. But the only problem is you have several mothers and fathers who stray pretty seriously from the gospel. And the church is supposed to help mitigate that. Also supposed to help mitigate problems of, you know, single-parent households where the single parent at home just can't handle, you know, getting food on the table and keeping a roof over the head consumes their everything they can do. Therefore, you really need an outside organization, a larger group, the church, the local branch, for instance, to try and help these people take care of spiritual needs, their own and their kids, perhaps. You know, circumstances are dictated by reality. We have a lot of broken families. The church also has a lot of kids or only families who are partially members of the church and would have lots of conflict in the home if somebody tried to really foist the gospel on their kids at home when one parent or the other don't want to do that. So church gives a way for modern realities to be honored and people to just have a place to go when they're just not capable of pulling off what needs to be pulled off. Which is funny because, yeah, church is probably second or third best way of doing this, but yet we are asked to put so much effort and so much stuff into it. Sometimes, see, and it creates this weird paradox, sometimes to the making life difficult for our families. I noticed that Lisa was putting so much effort and so much work into her calling because it was really too big for a mere human to do. One mere human, or one or two. And the people that she had gotten to help her were not terribly helpful. And you could say it was because Lisa didn't tell them she needed more help. You know, you come with 50 reasons. The reality was, she wasn't getting, she didn't have help, either if it was self-inflicted or not. She got burned out. She was constantly snipping and griping and getting nasty. And I was too when I was in this circumstance. I'm not blaming her at all. Any human, I think, would do this. You know, bringing it home, dumping it on me, dumping it on our kids, just frustrated and angry a lot, and you're going, all these gyrations and all this guilt dumped on her is to come up with a second or third rate delivery system for the gospel. When the delivery system we have in our household, within our family, works better. We have gospel discussions in our home. We have family home evening. We have all those things that are supposed to help your family get back to God, the primary ones. But we're spending all of our time and energy and joy is getting chewed up, and all we have left is anger, frustration, and bitterness. We're spending all that stuff on things that are third and second string delivery systems. Not taking out the church at all, because, I'm not saying bad things about them at all, because for a lot of people, second or third string things is the best they can have. And we need to have those things almost as a safety net for people who can't seem to do any better. You know, well, I don't pray very often. Oh, I don't do this very often. I don't do that very often. You know, I don't do the things that God really asked me to do. But I can show up at church. And you go, at least you have that. It's not adequate at all. Left to itself, because hopefully mostly what you're getting at church is, come on guys, we need to get this stuff done at home. Home needs to be the center of these things. So yeah, so what do? We self-flagellate in the modern sense about all these things that really don't matter. Does it matter who the President of the United States is? Except so far as he makes your life more miserable when he gets done what he actually wants to do. You know, your taxes go up, all those things. Does it really matter what he does? Why do we gyrate and gesticulate and get so exercised about elections coming up? Because it really doesn't have anything to do with you, particularly. It's mostly an exercise. There's so many people who vote for the president. Your mere vote, 1 in 300 million, is nothing. If you didn't vote, nobody would even notice. Now, if there's a huge group of you that don't do that, well, that's something. That means that if you have something to say, you want something to happen, you're going to have to get at least 100 million people to agree with you, to try to even get them to even notice you. If you're smaller than that, you're not worth anything unless you're pouring money into somebody's campaign or you're making some legislator's life better. And you better make a majority of the legislator's life better, or you're not going to get what you want. See, so that's what it ends up being. How much does it really affect you? How much does it really affect your family? Shouldn't you be more worried about those things? Because you can control those things. You don't have to flagellate yourself over those. It's the other things where they give you an impossible job, and then, you know, they might apply pressure to get you to do better at it when you're going, I've got enough problems. I don't need this. Bye. That's why people just throw their callings at your feet. You know, quit giving out impossible jobs. If you can't provide the level of support needed for people to successfully do their callings, don't give them the callings. Get rid of the calling. Get rid of the organization. Or just don't do it. Now, you don't have to get rid of it. That sounds like you're cutting off an arm or a leg. So just don't try to pull that off, because you're just causing people, you're causing some people problems because they don't care, and therefore it's not going to work. You're causing other people problems because they're responsible, but they're getting the crap beat out of them. Because it's really beyond them. That's where you get the burned out people. The other people, you can keep them in a calling forever, and it doesn't matter, because they're not going to do it, no matter what. You can always see plenty of examples of that if you're part of the Mormon Church. Or if you're a part of anything. You've seen people who are in a job and don't do half of what the job entails. They ignore it. And that's how they find happiness. Some things that absolutely need to be done. And you do that. You know? Anyway, I don't know if that made much sense at all. I don't know if you got a feeling for what I was talking about. It really depends on your take on things. Modern self-flagellation, I think, is a real problem in our society. It's a problem for me. I guess if you really don't care as a person, then I guess it really isn't a problem for you. I think that's what it comes down to. Anyway, this is Jay Nevrow. You're listening to The Life Autistic. This has been episode 586. And I got to my destination. I'm here. So it's time to stop and upload this thing to the big server. This is Jay Nevrow. Where's my mouse? There he is. Have a great day.